And all right, everybody, it is Wednesday the 8th of April, and welcome to the 9 Years Podcast Lockdown Edition. For today, you're listening to the voice of Nick Draper. I am joined today by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deacon. Stu, say hello.
Hello.
Mr. Kevin Boris.
Hello.
George Jones.
Hello.
And we've got two very special guests, as you will have seen from the writing that goes on the podcast or underneath the picture on the website and everything like that, so you'll know who I'm about to introduce. However, before I introduce our two very special guests today, George, yesterday's show, we on every edition of the show at the moment, we do things to keep you occupied during lockdown.
Yeah.
And your thing to occupy yourself during lockdown was a replay of a rugby tour.
Yeah.
Which is on this evening, if I got that right.
Yeah.
So what did you
because
do?
Because I wasn't... Yesterday, I finished re-watching the stuff I recommended last week on Netflix.
the motor racing stuff, the Formula One stuff?
Yeah, and the Sunderland Till I Die documentary, which I recommended.
Don't spoil it. No spoilers.
Yeah, we don't want to know how the season ends for Sunderland. Well, there we go. Okay, so when you come to later in the show, George, have you got something for this evening, or have you looked further ahead again?
I have got something for everyone for this evening.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that's what's on your Tinder profile as well. Anyway, moving on. Our two special guests today are Trevor Williams and Robin Bedford from the club, are a kitmen extraordinaire and in the same situation as all, really, I think. Robin, if I start with you, what's your situation? Because you are, if I've got this correctly, this is your job now. This is your full-time employment. So what's the situation with you currently?
Yeah, so I've been... So at the start of the season, I got made full-time. And then, obviously, now my current situation is I've been furloughed and, doing what everyone else is doing, basically, in lockdown.
How are you keeping yourself occupied? What sort of things are you getting up to? Is there anything exciting?
Not really. I've doing a bit of cycling. Turned myself into a bit of a baker and just watching TV as well. So nothing that exciting. We're trying to keep myself occupied. I've seemed to have become a consultant cyclist for some of the players as well, who've sort of taken up cycling to keep fit. So I've been trying to help them buy bikes and give them advice on that as well, which is a bit random, but it's all good. So
I was going to ask you about this is with the cycling, because obviously this is a big thing for you, a big passion of yours. Is that how many hours, was that something you'd be going out around the local area or whatever, or are you just on you sat at home on an exercise bike? How's it work for you?
No, I don't do the indoor cycling, although that's probably the thing to do right now. I use a sort of combination of commuting and a bit of fun and a bit of social riding. So, I mean, I usually do sort of 150 miles a week kind of thing. It keeps me fit. So, yeah.
Would do, yeah.
Yeah, blimey.
Sorry, you were saying the players are cycling. So, are you worried about anyone in particular at all? Like, because that's a bit dangerous. Is that allowed under their insurance? Is there anyone you're worried about with their balance and stuff?
Well, one of them is Woody, and Woody gets up to all sorts. So, there's every chance he gets in trouble. I think most of them are sensible enough, and it's just a good way for them to keep active and fit, I think, as well. So, especially at the moment, And at the moment, it's actually quite nice because there's not much traffic around, so it's probably a lot safer these days. So.
Yeah, because we've obviously been talking, we were chatting to Woody and a few of them, and they were sort of saying that Chris has set up some training plans for them, which I'd imagine would get quite boring. Because I was reading something today, actually, they were sort of saying like Premiership stars and have got gyms in their houses and stuff like that. But if you go down the pyramid, they haven't got that. So I suppose actually getting out and getting some fresh air, because I can imagine... footballers, I can imagine getting pretty bored being stuck indoors, I imagine.
Yeah, I think so. And it's, just something to keep active and get outside. And, it's pretty quite a good endurance-type fitness cycling, and it doesn't really... It's sort of low impact on your body. So it's probably one of the best things they can actually do other than running, which, obviously, as you say, can get a bit tedious, especially the kind of running they have to do, because it's sort of sprint for 2 minutes and then jog and then stuff like that. So it's not exactly exciting running either. Sort of doggies, as they call it. So, yeah.
And Trev, what about yourself? So you are, what are you, you're still at work, working from home, obviously, I understand. Well, is that right?
So working from home, I work for a groundworks company, not digging holes, frankly. But we've moved all our office, nobody's in our office anymore. So we've got most people working from home, and it was my job to make sure they were all capable of working from home. So that was a stressful few week or so before everyone moved out. But fingers crossed and touch wood and every other cliche, it seems to be going all right. And I'm actually annoyingly busy as well. I thought working from home would be a little bit of work in the morning, couple of calls, and then Netflix. And sadly, I'm actually quite busy, which I found a massive disappointment. However, I am still being paid, which is not a massive disappointment, which is absolutely lovely. So,
I was going to ask about this situation, because in teaching, it's slightly different in terms of I'm now on my protected Easter holiday time. So this is very much, I am now essentially having my wonderful 2 weeks off in the comfort of my living room with Netflix. For yourself and things like that, how did holiday time and stuff like that, did you have holiday time booked? Did you have time booked off to go to games? We had like...
We're quite lucky as much as our boss who we work for is a big football fan. He understands mine and Claire's passion for it. So he has no problem with us having time off, because they're very fair. As long as you're, like a lot of places, as long as you work hard and do what you're supposed to, if you want a bit of time off, then absolutely fine. I've always been quite lucky with that, because they understand the club is a huge passion of mine. They've known about it since we started, and even before that, all the old Wimbledon stuff. So we've known, they understand what it means to us. And me and Rocket were in the same boat until last year, and obviously it did have a massive impact on our holiday time and stuff like that. So, but no, we're no lucky in as much as we can, I can get the time off I need to go up north on a Tuesday morning, on a Tuesday night, and then get back at 4 o'clock in the morning and go work the next day, which is always fun.
I mean, we've had you guys on many years ago now. We did have you guys on the podcast before, but just to revisit because I don't think people really will know or understand just the amount of hours you were putting in at the time. In terms of an away game, from the time you start to pack the kit up, get it on the bus, travel up, travel back, unpack it, wash it, all of that, how many hours does this take you for a standard? Let's take a standard Lancashire, Manchester area away game, for example.
Well, it's obviously a lot different now, because a lot of our time, mine and Rocket's time, was spent, because no one was in, the kit used to get washed at the club, and then me and Rocket for a Friday, to depart on a Friday to go to up north, which is normally that was what would happen. We'd end up going in on a Thursday night after work from 7 till 9:30 to pack it. But now it's so much easier, because Rocket's there all the time. So now we go in, we normally arrive an hour or so before the coach, and that way, and Rocket's then done it all. So Rocket would obviously know more now, because Rocket now washes the kit, he gets it all ready. So from that point of view, it makes it so much easier, even from, because you haven't got to do that extra coming in after work, because Rocket's already got all that done.
And Rock, I guess now your role changes a little bit with working during the week and stuff like that, in terms of getting kits and stuff ready and naming and numbering and all that business. That's all your responsibility?
Yes. But I mean, the naming and numbering, I used to do quite a lot of that anyway. Now literally it's all down to me, basically, and with obviously Trev's help on a sort of match day. But now I've also sort of, as part of the sort of, as a way of sort of making my income work for me as well, that the players actually make a contribution directly towards my salary, basically. So I now wash not all of them, but most of the players' kits, training kits. So between that and match day kit, that's sort of my week is taken up basically doing washing.
I've got two questions for you, Robin. Number one is a serious question. A lot of people complain. Nick's one of them. I'm going to point the finger at Nick. We have an away game against a team that wear red, and you think, okay, we're going to wear blue and we wear green, right, on a Tuesday. Now, what we're told is the reason that the green kit is being worn, not the blue kit, doesn't clash, is because there's not enough time to wash the blue kit from the Saturday to the Tuesday. Now, question number one, is that true?
To some degree, although it's obviously easier now, the main reason we used to do it was because to turn around the kit was a pain, and in that quickly, because it's not just washing it, it's packing it and then getting it ready again and finding the time to do that and getting it dried. Now, there's few reasons why we don't wear the blue that often away. One which doesn't really get mentioned is that is you actually can't clash with the referee or the two goalkeepers. You have to have all five of those have to be wearing different colours. And sometimes to make that work, you then have to wear, we have to wear an away kit, as it were.
Right.
So that's one, not massive reason, but it is one reason. And you have to give your colours in advance to the ref. So he sort of approves it before.
Okay.
Sort of the week before the game, as it were. So that's one reason. Also, I mean, there's the wear and tear is another reason. Just if we've got these kits, we might as well wear them. The players actually like wearing. So like this year, most of their favourite kit is they like the fit of the green kit this year.
Yeah, Terrell said
and
that.
The sort of style of it. So that's another reason that adds up. But I mean, we try to, and also another random reason is, whenever we've won the blue kit away from home, I don't think we've won in it. Certainly in the recent history.
This season, definitely not.
We rarely win there anyway.
True. So my second question.
So there is one game we make an exception for, which we do always. We have always worn the blue kit away from home. I think you'll probably guess which game that is.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So that's partly sort of me, if they, as much as anything, going, they didn't want that colour, so we'll use it.
Oh, I like that.
You know, they were supposed to keep those colours, so if they don't want to keep them, then we'll turn up in them.
We'll have them. No, that's the best answer. I do have another question, which is an odd one, and I apologise for this question, right? Now, so you spend a lot of your week around used football kit, right? So, can you recognise a player, any given player, by smelling his shirt? So, if someone said to you, "Right, you can't see the number, which player is this?"
Have
a quick whiff of it, and you go, "Yeah, that's definitely Scott Wagstaff." Would you recommend a player, but recognise a player by his smell, Robert?
I don't think I could recognise everyone, but there's a couple. I mean, Max Sanders has some fancy aftershave, and his kit always smells lovely. So I definitely get him. And then there's a few others who have a bit more of a pong. I won't name names, but yeah.
Don't name that.
But there's a couple. I don't think I'd get everyone, though. So
I just wondered if there was a particular scent. Thank you. It was a strange question, but it just occurred to me, and I thought, no one's telling me I can't ask this, so I'm going to ask it. Thank you.
I mean, the other one is, because we had Joe Piggott on the other week, and we were asking about squad numbers, and he couldn't remember squad numbers of his teammates, saying, you know, he hadn't played with them for so long that he'd forgotten about them. I'm guessing these things for you two are pretty much committed to memory, are they? Because you see them so often?
The regular ones are. I think when you get kids in the side with the higher numbers and stuff like that, them ones take a little bit longer to kick in. But so, I think sometimes you associate a number with a player as well. Like in my head, certain players are certain numbers, if you know what I mean. So like Barchi will always, number 17 will always be Barchi, and I'm not even sure who's number 17 at the minute.
See, this is what I was thinking. Do we start chucking names at you and be like, number?
Yeah. Thingy Bob, isn't it?
Say again?
It's
Falivi. Falivi now.
Falivi was 17. Yeah, was.
Yeah.
Oh, there's somebody else now.
It's when you sort of old players, you get mixed up with, I think. Or when they change numbers, that's the worst one. Because, Andy Harlick was always 28, and that's caused some confusion now, because he's obviously now 8. So.
And you know what? I was thinking he was 18, but that's more probably because of his age, which he probably isn't even 18 anymore. He's just always stuck with him. Okay, let's have a quick go then. Let's chuck a number at you. Shane McLaughlin.
Oh my God, I've completely gone. No, to be fair, I haven't touched any kit. We haven't touched any kits for a month. I haven't got a clue.
He's 19.
He is 19.
He watches them every day, so.
Robin, what about, let's go for Nesta Guinness-Walker.
No, easy one, 18.
do. Trev Rob McDonald.
Concrete Rods, number four.
Number four. And then Robin, let's go for Adam Rossgrove.
Number 10.
Well, yeah, bang on the money there. See, I don't know. I used to be really good at this, but I'm rubbish now. I'm really bad. And when the subs board comes up with the numbers for a substitution, yeah.
Who's coming off?
Yeah, you're trying to work, figure out who's who. Even if the player is on the pitch at the time, I'm like, it takes me forever. That's why the program is handy. Just have that list there. But anyway, right. What have you guys made of the season then, or whatever? I mean, your guess is as good as anyone else's as to what's going to happen come the end of it. But in terms of the way we finished off, winning away at Gillingham, then we had the draw with Bolton with the goal that was disallowed for offside, which wasn't offside. But were you confident of avoiding the drop by the end of it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if there was ever a year to not be very good and not get relegated, this was it. So I don't think we had to do a huge amount to stay up. There's no disrespect to where we were, but three relegation places and looking like the best part of them were two already taken, so it shouldn't have been the hardest job. And I think we would have stayed up, to be fair. I mean, our form, Tranmere were picking up form, but there's still a long way to go in the season, and there still might be a long way to go in the season. But yeah, I think we would have stayed up, or we might, but see, who knows what's going on in the future. But no, I was confident where we were still in a great position, and it was still a big ask of anyone below us to go past us, and we had some winnable games coming up as well. So no, I think we would have been all right. You would have liked to have a little bit more of a cushion than we had at this stage. And if it all starts again, then obviously that's going to be a real weird one, and we're not quite sure where we're going to be with that. But no, I was where we were, I thought, Yeah, we had enough in the locker to do it.
And Rocket, for yourself, in terms of performances, any away games, away trips you've had this season that stand out in the memory, either for performances or results, which way you look at it?
I'm trying to think what, other than Gillingham. Because, yeah, away from home, we've not picked up many wins anyway. But I think as the season's gone on, sort of since Glyn's taken over, we've always steadily picked up points, and performances have always been pretty, you know, almost deserve something out of every game or been in it every game. So, yeah, I think we were just slowly picking up points and whilst never really getting out of the relegation zone, we were always seemed to be reasonably comfortable above it. So you think we'd just stay up without too many massive issues.
I think the only time I can remember us really being battered was Oxford.
Yeah. Yeah,
even games we've lost, I don't remember us being... I think we've always got the impression we've been there or thereabouts in games. Maybe not from the attacking point of view as much as the management had always liked, but I think we've been there or thereabouts in games. I think you can pick the games where we've been proper battered on one hand, if you know what I mean. I think we've, for the most, Rocket says, for the most part, we've been in games, perhaps not been as good as we'd like to be, but we're not getting turned over every week. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the point. Our goal difference isn't that bad, is it? If it's what keeps us up, hilariously, again, it's proof that most of the games we've lost have been by a goal or two. It's been pretty solid, a solid number of narrow defeats.
We won't mention the fact that Blue was...
Our problem is we're not Blue the most...
Yeah, it's true.
High scoring side, are we? So
no, not generally.
I was just going to... Obviously, Kev was talking about kicks, which has made me laugh about that question about smell. That's brilliant, to be fair.
Thank you.
I was thinking, I've been fortunate enough to be with you guys a couple of times with a kit, and I can honestly say, I remember we come back one night from an away game, and I think it was a midweek game, and you guys were literally washing the kit straight away after a long away game. And I was just like, that is just crazy. So I fully understand what you guys do. I'm being nosy, really. Obviously, with all the training kit and stuff like that, do certain players have certain requirements of what kit is laid out for them and what training tops and stuff like that? Are they that demanding? Because I can understand they want certain stuff. But have you got certain players that maybe want a short sleeve or a long sleeve or different type of training kit?
Rocket will be able to inverse on this for sure. But yeah, for matches, certain players have a certain pair of socks, cycle shorts, Under Armour. Rocket will be able to give you the details of every single player, I think, now.
Well, yeah, not every player will have slightly different, something slightly different. So no two players all have the same kit, if that makes sort of sense. And that, yeah, like Terry says, some have Under Armour, some want like a rain jacket every training session, some got hats and gloves and stuff like that. So they're all slightly different one way or another. We were actually going to do a video towards, from the sort of match day kit point of view with the club, might happen, but so that, yeah, one that would have answered some of those questions in that where we were going to sort of show how different players have on a match day, certainly have different requirements. So yeah, the club, that was in the club's plans to do, but when that, I hope that, well, we'll do it at Plough Lane, but if that happens as a King's Meadow thing, I don't know.
So I'm very keen to, you've got me thinking, who asked for gloves? What players are asking for gloves?
Can you say no? Say,
man up. You can't say that now, by the way.
Person up.
Training most of them, because it is, I mean, even in the changing room at the training ground, it's, you get in the morning, it's colder inside the changing room than it is outside, so that's partly why. But there's not that many wearing during the game, I don't think. Maybe the odd, I know Terrell quite often does. And maybe Pigs, but yeah, I mean, most of them wear for training, at least to start with anyway.
The most popular demanded item is a woolly hat for substitutes mainly, I think.
Yeah. See, I can get on board with the gloves thing, because if I was a professional footballer, I would wear gloves in the winter, because my extremities and everything, they just, my fingers will seize up. I can't use my hands for about an hour after the game, so I would wear gloves. I drew the line at the days of the snood when that became a thing. And I would probably, yeah, maybe a woolly hat might be, I might draw the line there, but anyway,
you've just got to run faster. If your hands are cold, just run faster than it.
If only that were true. Only that was the case. Never mind.
I was just going to ask a question. Obviously, my little boy was mascot December-wise, and I was fortunate enough to get into the dressing room. One of the things that struck me was everyone had a different routine. Like Nathan Trott was on the floor looking like he was going to just fall asleep. He was so relaxed. And other people, what? I'm not going to give him, but who would you say like are the most relaxed or edgy or, you know, hyper and stuff like that? What's the dynamics like in that change room at the moment?
I think with the warm-ups, a lot of players have their own sort of process as well. I remember Cal Kennedy used to go through what effectively was a quite involved ballet routine before playing. He did mostly, it would about 15, 20 minutes, weren't it, Rocket? And it would be identical. We'd always take him off, try and find somewhere reasonably quiet, and he'd do his stretches and stuff like that. And he went through a very, very set programme. And like you say, Trotz is the most laid-back man in the world. But yeah, you've got, I don't know, there's not, I'm trying to think if there's any, like Pigs is normally reasonably sort of does the music and is reasonably sort of loud. But we haven't really got, I want to say it's the most loud dressing we've ever had, would you, Rob?
No, I think, we don't really have proper, like the sort of the old character, like the leaders like Jason Goodliffe and Framo back in the day. Yeah, another one who used to, I mean, a lot of them, they call it prehab or activation or something. Like Marcus Force had quite a set routine because he had back issues, I think. So there's certainly in the dressing room before they go out, they all do their own thing. And then once they're out, this will see more of a team warm-up type thing.
So what was it like when you had we were talking before about, you know, we had some teams that have had immense characters. I think this team is, obviously as a team gets younger, that sometimes, you know, when I think back to the characters like Darius Charles, Paul Robinson, Lyle, Bayo, what are those change rooms like? You know, with Bayo, Lyle, Tom Elliott, you know, Jake Reeves, there were some really strong characters. Were they quite fun days?
If you look at that promotion winning squad, the League Two squad, that's, with all due respect, that's the best squad we've ever had. Best squad in terms of players. You had a front four of Bayo, Lyle, Tom, and Adi Aziz as well. You anyone would bite your hand off for that now. You had Reevesy and Bully, and character wise as well. They were sort of like, looking at Tom and Adi were quite quiet. Bayo was Bayo. Lyle was Lyle, which is just funny and a pest as well. So, but then you had like Bully and stuff. The dressing room was brilliant. The dressing room would be, he'd be one of them that gets the dressing room going just by doing something silly or putting some music on or putting Justin Bieber on just to annoy Lyle Taylor.
Duran
to annoy everybody. Had a meltdown. But no, you had like people at Reeves in there, but yeah, Rob Paul Robinson and people like, you just can't, and that is it. That is a good squad. We've got some good players, but what we've got is a young, inexperienced squad, and that does sort of reflect in the dressing room a bit, as in, isn't it? People in there are good and they're good characters and stuff like that, but I think when you've got a Paul Robinson or someone like that who's literally been there, done it, that you come with authority and you know what you're talking about and you come with authority and everybody sees that. So if you can get them characters together, it's a huge difference.
We had a bit of a financial shortfall for Plough Lane. I've suddenly realised if we'd have just got Stu to put £1 in a jar every time he mentions Lyle Taylor's name on a podcast, we would have paid for that stadium about three times over already, I think.
Would it be called the Stu?
Lyle in
Hamilton. That's the only question. I was going to ask, this has not been detrimental to the current squad. After that, two seasons ago when we played Walsall, won that game 3-2, have been 2 down at half-time, and that was a game that kind of propelled, give us the chance to start that season. There was reports, I'm not asking about this bit, there was reports that two or three senior players took over the half-time team talk. I'm not suggesting that's true or not, but I like the idea of that. The players said, no, this is what we're going to do. And then...
Was that Walsall away, 2-0 down, 3-2 up?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Now, we were informed that at half-time, some of the players took over the half-time team talk. My point is, currently...
Nonsense.
Okay. Currently, we don't have anyone in that...
Crap.
It was... Okay. Now, that's what we heard. But it seemed likely, because of the characters we had in that team, that could have happened. Do we have those kind of characters now? Or are we a bit more of a polite squad? Because if you look at our suspension, our disciplinary record, it's pretty good. We don't have those kind of players. I'm not saying you need them, but this squad seems to be a lot more sort of polite, nice people. Is that true or is that unfair?
Go on, Mark.
I think it's a bit of... I mean, obviously, I think experience makes a big difference in that kind of stuff. I mean, certainly, there was, at the Walsall, I don't recall... anything like, I don't ever recall anything really like that. I mean, there'll be a few times where the manager will have their say, whether that's Ards, Wally or Glyn, and then leave them to it, or before the manager has his say, the players, usually in most games, especially if you're not doing well, the players come in and initially have their own, you know, they'll say their own thing between themselves, and then the manager will come in and then do his sort of bit. So,
I think as Rocket says, it's difficult for... We've got a lot of young players on the side, and I think they're almost... When you've got, let's say, choose Paul or Darius or someone like that, they know their game. They know the game they're playing, and they've played 100 and 200 games of football. So they know where they are. They know what we need to do. They can see what's going wrong on the pitch. And even if you can't solve it straight away in the dressing room, there's certain things you can do. Senior players will sort of make adjustments on the pitch, as it were. Do you know what I mean? A manager can't see everything. A manager can't always give chapter and verse. You can't stop a game for 35 minutes to do some tactics. So that's when your senior players come in, which is just basically, you've got a senior centre-half of a young left-back. You might need your senior centre-half to go, no, you're not going forward for the next 10 minutes. You come and stand next to the minute. You know what I mean? I think that's something that comes with experience of being an experienced player, knowing the game, knowing, being able to see what's going on in the game, but then having the confidence to do that and be right doing that. So it's really hard to expect young players to do that.
Yeah.
And it's not that they're not good characters. It's not that they're not confident in what they do. I just think it's just born of their age and stuff like that. They haven't got the experience. Maybe they haven't got the confidence to start telling people what to do.
Yeah.
Whereas look at Rambo had the confidence of telling people what to do within 2 minutes of being in the front, being in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was a massive influence in that dressing room. Once he arrived, because it did not just even what he said, it's just the way he went about stuff, and he just brought everyone together in the dressing room. And I think that was a massive part of our staying up last year, was the way he brought the team together, especially with goalkeepers. It's not often that really happens where the goalkeeper really gets involved with everyone else, and he was certainly one of his big plus points, was he did that.
Yeah. But again, he's a kid of 20 years old. But to do that, to rally a dressing room as the youngest person there, pretty much, is a quite extraordinary thing. And we always talk about him a lot, of course. But it's his influence off the pitch was much as his ability on it, I think, why people loved him so much.
I think you think just he's a nice guy for a start, and you can't pretend. You can pretend to be a nice guy, but then every action he did, everything he did, the way he interacted with people, see the way he was with fans, see the way he was his young players. It's just that's not someone playing a part. That's just someone being himself. He's just genuinely a nice guy, and extraordinarily good at what he does as well. And also, you bring him into the environment of that. You got Bezo as well, who is exceptional. He's mad as a bag of frogs, love him, but he is exceptional at what he does as well. And so it's not surprising you get these young goalkeepers and you get like Trotts, and you think we've had them before, and they've come through the academy, and Bezo finishing score is an exceptional thing. And you can see that by the results we've had with young keepers we've had in on loan, and also young keepers we've had around the place, and unfortunately have had to sell.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Jack. Thank you.
And we do forget with our current squad just how young it is on average, and also, like you mentioned, your senior pros there that were full. Just one of those things this season have picked up injuries, whatever. Wordsworth's been out, Wagstaff had a spell out, got suspended, came back in, got suspended almost immediately. These things happen, so I think we do tend to forget that, especially when we look at perhaps closing games out early in the season. This is where these young players gain those sorts of experience of maybe managing games and not getting done late at Ipswich or Coventry or wherever it might be. But one young player that's made a huge impression is Paul Ossu. And I almost said his name wrong because I'm preparing us for our game inspired by him, which we call Paul Ossu, in which we give you a list of five players that a current or former Wimbledon player has played with during their career. We then gave you two managers and then a final clue, and you try and guess who it is. So I'm going to hand over to our quiz master, Mr. George Jones, to lead you through this one. George?
Okay, so for anyone who hasn't heard this before, it's three rounds. The first round is five players this player has played with. The second...
It's a good thing you're here, George, to explain the rules, because otherwise we'd have been struggling.
Second round's going to be two managers this player has played under. And then the final round is sort of a giveaway clue.
Can we just check so the listeners are sure? So five players first, then two managers, then another... Right, okay, right.
Yeah, and then...
Five players first.
Definitely players first, and definitely managers second. Only an idiot would get that wrong. But it's... So, and the answer is going to be either a current or former AFC Wimbledon player. So, the five
or
players...
Or Wimbledon FC, perhaps? Sorry to interject.
It could be, yes.
It's not going to be today, though, is it?
Not today, no.
Well done, George.
Thank you, Kev. But the five clues this week are Gary Alexander, Liam Trotter, Tyrone Barnett, George Moncur, and Connor Smith.
Go for them again.
I love all five of those players.
I know you do. The five players, Gary Alexander, Liam Trotter, Tyrone Barnett, George Moncur, and Connor Smith.
Right. I hate this game sometimes.
So Gary Alex and...
There's a Millwall connection there, I imagine.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Millwall.
I mean, Tyrone Barnett's played at...
Port Vale.
Crawley.
So,
George Moncur is the outlier, isn't he? Because he's played in other countries.
So, George Moncur was West Ham.
Yeah.
Colchester.
Yeah.
Luton.
Yeah.
Up north at Blackpool.
Partick Thistle. Played for Partick Thistle on loan.
We had that the other day, didn't we, no clue?
Did it yesterday.
Oh, that's weird, eh?
that was another day. Yes, it wasn't today. Barnsley. That's a tough one.
Go on then again. Sorry, George, I should have written these down.
Okay, so the five players, Gary Alexander,
yeah.
Nick's favourite player, Liam Trotter, Tyrone Barnett, George Moncur, and Connor Smith.
So Connor Smith would have been Watford. That's out. Mm-hmm.
Where else did he go? Plymouth and
Plymouth. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I've got. Can I have a guess? Am I going to ruin it? I'm going to guess Danny Bullman.
That was my first thought, but I couldn't think George Moncur.
No, it's not Danny Bullman.
Oh, cheers, George.
So one person's
played. You're replacing my mastermind.
See, Gary Alexander could have been when he played for us, couldn't it?
Yeah.
So he could be going back that way to a Millwall connection, maybe.
But Liam Trotter.
Paul Robinson.
But Trotter's played for... Yeah, could be.
Go on, George. Go on, managers.
So the next round includes the two managers, Andy Scott and Kenny Jackett.
So, Millwall... So, Andy Scott.
Okay.
Yeah.
George has definitely got upset because he's lost the last four.
Yeah.
The last four I lost in the first round. So this is making up for it.
You feel bad now, don't you? It's like playing the chase, isn't it?
Andy Scott's managed who else? Aldershot? Is that right?
Yeah, I think he was at Brentford. Went to Bradford.
He was at Brentford, yeah.
Jake Reeves?
No, not Jake Reeves.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
So Trotter has played for what? Ipswich, Bolton, us,
Millwall,
and Scunthorpe. It can't be Lyle Taylor again.
No.
All right, can I have another guess? I'm going to guess Luke O'Neill again.
No, we've done him...
Well, no, you're flouting of the rules, George. Could be anybody.
where's Kenny Jackett been? Portsmouth?
Rotherham?
Has he?
Yep.
Has he? No. Watford?
Rotherham. Absolutely Rotherham. He was very briefly in charge of Rotherham. Guaranteed.
George Fellaini?
No, not Michael Fellaini.
Don't know why I said that, to be honest.
Not a goalkeeper.
No, not a goalkeeper.
Or a loney.
Can we ask the position?
It is a centre-back.
Oh.
Oh,
hang on.
Did Robin mention him earlier on?
Hmm.
I don't think so.
Oh. this must make great radio, isn't it? Join in, listeners, and listen to us thinking about something.
You can hear us thinking.
This is thought for the day, but it lasts an entire hour. Brilliant. This radio goal, isn't it?
Jesus. It really is.
Who would need a final clue, George?
Oh, I think it puts us out of our misery, George.
Okay, the final clue, he won a promotion with us.
Paul Robinson, then?
No.
Paul Robinson, yeah.
Not Paul Robinson.
It's not Darius Charles because he was mentioned.
Not Ishmael Yakubu.
No.
He won a promotion with us.
Brett Johnson. It's Brett Johnson. Of course it is.
No.
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 Who's played for Scunthorpe with?
It's got to be the Plymouth final.
What level was the promotion to?
Yeah.
It was into League One.
Got to be
that
Paul
Robinson.
Centre half.
Darius.
It wasn't Paul Robinson. Darius.
Mark Phillips.
No.
Who played centre half that season?
You made a good impression of it.
Carly Osborne.
Correct.
Oh.
Carly Osborne. Me. I'd forgotten about Carly.
Of course, yeah. Brentford
here as well. We should be fresh in your head. He's an agent now, so he's often down the ground.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah, have you seen him around?
I've noticed him down the ground.
He's the nicest guy you could wish to meet as well. Top man.
Yeah.
Where did he play? Tell us who he played with, George.
Okay, he played with Gary Alexander at Brentford, with Liam Trotter at Millwall, Tyrone Barnett at Bristol City, George Moncur at Colchester and Connor Smith at Plymouth. Andy Scott managed him at Brentford and obviously Kenny Jackett at Millwall.
Well, there you go.
I didn't know that Barnett had played for Bristol City, so that ruled him out completely.
Yeah.
Bo has had a number of clubs, bless him.
Yes, he has. Made a massive impression wherever he's got.
I'm just thinking George, of
Carl.
Well done, George.
Yeah, you can beat us, George. You got your reputation is back, George.
Yes.
Right. Trev, Robin, also, as part of being on the podcast, on the show, we have got our either-or questions or our... Yeah, our either-or questions for you. We've got a set of 10 questions for you both, so really it's a toss of a coin as who wants to go first. Does either of you have a preference as to who goes first?
I don't.
I'll go first.
Robin, you go first? Alphabetical order on...
Yep.
Yeah? Okay, cool. Right. Yeah, all right, so let's start with... This is just the first answer that comes into your head. Marmite, love or hate?
Hate.
Deep pan or stuffed crust?
Stuffed crust.
Carol Vorderman or Rachel Riley?
Vorderman.
Tiger King or Burger King?
Tiger King.
Shorts in the summer or shorts all year round?
All year round.
Golf, yes or no?
No.
Right answer. VAR, yes or no?
No, well, not his current format, no.
Jake Gyllenhaal or Casey Affleck?
Who? Casey Affleck.
Right, we're on to the big ones now. Luton or Watford?
I'm going to annoy you and say Watford.
Oh, my word. Dear me. Rockin' Robin or Batman and Robin?
Rockin' Robin.
And finally, when you make a cup of tea, does the bag go in the mug first or does the milk go in the mug first?
The bag does.
It does indeed. Thank you very much. yeah. I would really struggle in your job when it comes to the amount of Watford loanees we've had. I would really struggle. I don't know how I'd cope with that one. It would be difficult.
Luton just more being our rivals more than Watford as well. So
this is true. We have, yes, in recent times.
Yeah. Recent history.
Yes.
And we're playing next season. Well, possibly.
We're not going up, Stu.
And they're not coming down.
All right, Trev, your list. There will be some duplicate questions here, but we'll start with mushy peas, yes or no?
Yes.
Deep pan or stuffed crust?
Deep pan.
Vorderman or Riley?
Vorderman.
Did Carol Baskin kill her husband, yes or no?
You've got to see this, weren't
you? I don't know who she is, so I'm going to go no.
Okay, she definitely did. Like, okay, she definitely did. Are Crocs acceptable at any point of the year, yes or no?
Of course not.
I know the answer to this already. Cricket, yes or no?
Of course, yes.
VAR, yes or no?
No.
Florence Pugh or Margot Robbie?
Florence, she's mad as hell.
Yeah, I would pick Florence as well. I already know the answer to this one as well. Trevor Bayliss or Trevor Kettle?
It depends, really, doesn't it? Do you want to talk to them or do you want to be locked in a room with them for 5 minutes with a big stick? Based on that, Kettle.
Luton or Watford?
Luton.
Thank you very much. And finally, when you make a cup of tea, do you put the bag in first or do you put the milk in first?
My bag.
Absolutely. 100%. You've not seen Tiger King then yet, Trev. Robin, have you watched Tiger King? Yes?
Yeah, I've watched that last week, so yeah.
Did Carol Baskin kill her husband?
I really reckon so.
I think
there's certainly some questions to be answered anyway.
Just a few.
Can I ask which Trevor Bayliss were you referring to, Nick? The cricket coach or the mad inventor?
Oh, I was thinking of the inventor that was on The Big Breakfast back in the day, in the shed.
That's where I was as well.
Oh, yeah. I thought immediately the Australian cricket coach who was England cricket coach.
Yeah, I immediately went to the England coach.
Yeah. Cricket to me is like asking you, Kevin, about WWE, really.
Yes, I probably know more about WWE having kids than you do about cricket.
True. There we go.
I was just going to say, it's very interesting you're saying about VAR. Very few players have said no. Actually, Will Nightingale said no to it on Monday. What are you... I know, Trev, I guess you don't like it quite a bit. What's your... Why don't you not like it?
I dislike it ever in the game, ever. It's just the way it's working at the minute is just preposterous. So, unless they can... It's interesting to talk about the cricket thing, because it took cricket years and years to come up with a system that everyone agreed to and everyone was happy with. It went through numerous different permutations before it was actually, you get to where we were now. So I think that's inevitably going to happen with football as well. And it might mean a step back and it might mean a step forward until eventually people are happy with it.
Do you ever see it coming down to League One level?
If somebody else pays for it, possibly, but the cost involved in actually installing the cameras and some grounds, I'm not even sure you could physically do it, could you? And I think you've got, like, not picking on Luton, but you need a certain height on one side. You physically would have trouble doing it for goal line technology and stuff like that. I think it's a way off that yet, if you know what I mean, less the technology.
Yeah. And Rocky, what are your concerns about VAR?
Similar to Trevor, I think it's trying to do more than it needs to do almost. It's trying to get every decision right rather than just sort of the important decisions right, I think is probably the easiest way to look. Some of those offside decisions are just ludicrous, like, because, you know, the big toes just in front of that. Just if it's not an obvious, if it's not clear, as I think the thing says, it's, if it's not clear and obvious, then then go with what the rest or the initial on pitch decision.
I think it's just been made incredibly complicated by the deciding that offside is a line decision, so therefore you need to go down to a micrometer to find out whether it's offside or not, which is just insane. But I don't know how you make that work. If you decide that the offside is a line decision, then you're committing yourself to this graphic-based nonsense that you have to sit through on a Saturday. I mean, unfortunately, we don't see it, but friends of ours are got Palace, and it changes. They said it changes the way you watch a game and celebrate a goal, because you celebrate a goal, then you stop, and then you wait for the camera. So you don't really fully celebrate goals, because you jump up, think you've scored a goal, then 2 minutes later you've not scored a goal. And they said it's completely changed the way they watch football. You celebrate, stop, and then sit around for 2 minutes while they try and find a reason that you haven't scored. So the longer it stays away from us, from our stuff. I mean, goal line technology is absolutely fine, because that is a line decision, and that's a factual thing. But apart from that, I think there's a lot of stuff that's open to interpretation, that if you try and impose VAR on it, it's just going to disappear down a rabbit hole.
It's interesting to say that, because me and Nick discussed the VAR, if you remember, Nick, right at the beginning of the season, didn't we? And I said to you at the time, you can see players not wanting to celebrate. Because when you look very stupid, when you celebrate a goal, and then you're waiting around. I think the two issues I have with VAR is one, that it feels like there's a stance to start from, how can we not give the goal? So it's more a case of what went wrong in that. You know, can we not give the goal? And I think that the second one is that if you're watching a game at home, you have more idea what's going on with VAR than you do in a stadium, which doesn't seem right, really, when you've got a paying public who, you know, if you think about Liverpool, they don't have, which I still find amazing, Liverpool don't have a TV screen in that ground.
United.
You just think, why have they not got a TV screen in there? But, yeah, I don't know if we could have one at Plough Lane, to be fair, but that'd be interesting as well with that side of it.
We can just get someone in one of the flats to turn theirs round.
Obviously, in cricket, every review decision is played out on the screen in the ground, so you can. It's eminently clear what's going on, and it's quickly become part of the game, because you know it's only going to be, for the most time, you know it's going to take a certain amount of time, and then that's it. It's done. So you sort of, if it's a run out or something like that, you know it's tight. You'll know you're going to be there. If it's the only time it gets slow, it slows it down really, as if a catch hasn't carried, they look at it from a few angles, but it doesn't feel over long like it does when you're watching football on telly, where it feels like there's three minutes between the incident and then the decision, and then the reversal of the decision or not, as the case may be.
Yeah. But again, cricket is a game of gaps anyway. Now, I'm a big cricket fan, but you watch cricket when there's a decision's given, the batsman just thinks, well, I'm not out, and stands there, sees that it's out, and then puts the boundaries on and walks off. There's no argument.
That's the thing as well you get into with VR, isn't it? The game flows, so the game's flowed, so then you can't stop it until there's a natural break in the game and you go back. And it's just too complicated a web at the minute.
You've also got a different person other than the referee making the decision as well, which, again, for some of those decisions, just seems bizarre as well.
Yeah, I think you're right, Rock. As if the referee thought he saw something, and then he went to a screen in the corner, and what he saw on that screen wasn't what he thought he saw, you'd find that more acceptable, if you know what I mean. And maybe if you're going to do it, maybe the referee is the arbiter of what deserves to be turned over or not.
Could you imagine?
We've all witnessed some stinkers, haven't we? I mean, us particularly, talking to Sunderland, the handball on the line and Eastley away, the handle. That's quite like VAR. So it does serve a purpose, but it needs to be right before it's rolled out, and it's just in everybody's football lives from now for eternity, if you know what I mean.
Could you imagine Trevor Kettle or some of the League One referees at Stockley Park?
I can't stop thinking of poor Trevor again. I should have pinched it, really, shouldn't I? I remember the name. But no, it is. I mean, you joke about referees and stuff like that. All I would say is, and you talk to them, and I try to. We talk to them. They stick their heads in the dressing room sometimes. They're quite nice and they're all reasonably friendly. I don't think any of them, none of them go out and try and be bad. Do you know what I mean? None of them go out and try and be bad. They make mistakes. And unfortunately, the thing that annoy you is when they do something that the good old talking points, consistency and stuff like that. Anyone can make a mistake, because if you sit on the bench, your angle at watching the game's terrible anyway. So you look at it and you go, genuinely, I have no idea what's happened sometimes. And you're asking a ref to be perfect, and no one on the pitch is perfect. None of the players are perfect. So you can't expect that. And football fans need to accept that, for the most part, whether it's Trevor Kettle, he gets a lot, or whoever, then none of them go out to be bad. They go out, and I don't think some of them don't help themselves, but none of them go out to be bad. None of them are bent. None of them are corrupt. They just make mistakes like everybody does. And if you didn't have that VAR there as a sensible safety net, then great at a certain level. But football fans also need to accept you don't want VAR. If you don't want VAR, then you've got to accept you're going to get bad decisions sometimes.
There are some fans behind the goal that I think are convinced that every single referee that we ever have is 100% biased against us, and every game we fail to win is for no other reason than the referee has been paid off by the FA to keep us down in league, or even send us down to league.
Nick, do you remember, we obviously the last game, which could be the last game at King's Meadow, Bolton in that free kick, the offside.
The offside free kick, yes, I do. How can
it
I forget?
It was the most hilarious thing. Dick and I knew the rules, but around us, they were like, the referee's crazy. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Literal foaming at the mouth, people were.
To be fair, I think you also might... There's also a certain group of players that don't necessarily understand the laws of the game either. Certainly stuff like that has been revised. And trying to explain it to some people as well. But it was in the wrong half. Well, no, but it's where the offence took place. Yeah, but you can't have offside. No, no, it's where you end up going around in circles sometimes.
So it wasn't just the fans then?
No, John, to be fair, you've got like weird bits of football and stuff like that where there are weird, it's like the ask the umpire questions where we have all these weird scenarios in cricket where what can happen. But you do, that's a really unusual thing that happened in that game. Even I had to think, I went, well, that's nonsense. And then you actually think back and go, that changed. And then I was shocked to find out. I thought it changed in the summer. It turned out it changed 2 years ago or something like that. Because you don't see it every week. It freaks people out, which is understandable. And you're football fans. We're not full football fans. We're not supposed to know the laws of the game. We're supposed to believe, like say, everyone's biased against you. And that's the only reason we lose games.
Can't let you go without talking about Plough Lane. Obviously, on the horizon and as far as we're aware, still being built at the moment. Rocket, obviously, you were talking about sort of changing room, and we know King's Meadow changing room has been done up and looks nice now. How excited are you about the facilities at Plough Lane? And just being nosy, have either of you guys had any influence at all, or what you would like, or, you know, what would be beneficial for your job?
Well, I was actually lucky enough. I went with a couple of players a couple of weeks ago, just to see it. And yeah, it's almost emotional just walking in. It's still a building site, so I mean, God knows how people are going to be when we get there. But it's such a. I think people will be struck by how big the main stand is as well. It's like the photos don't really show that even. And yeah, the view from the sort of from the corporate boxes is going to be, or even the top of the tier of seats is, there's some view from there of the pitch. In terms of what we've had a little bit of influence, but nothing, not probably as much as we'd like. And some of the layout isn't, I don't think, ideal for us, but I think we'll, things like that we can cope with. But it's not that much different from what we've got now. It's just in a different layout. And that, what would be nice is that's actually going to be ours, and we can, for the first time, really make it ours, I think. Because, you know, we've always shared Kings Meadow with Kingston or Chelsea, so we've not really been able to make it our home, as it were. So that would be a big thing for us.
I think we've been quite lucky, in as much as me and Rocket have been in just about every dressing room. We've been all over the place, and we've been to good ones and bad ones. And you do sort of get an idea of what you think's good and what you think's bad from it, like little things and little features and stuff like that. So, yeah, it'd be nice to get certain things right. I mean, essentially, it's a dressing room, so you don't need to reinvent the wheel with it. but you do see little things around, and we see lots of stuff like how they've decorated around the dressing room and stuff like that. Like Notts County have like from the home dressing room to the tunnel as a fair old trot, but they've got to have like the history of the club on the wall and stuff like that, from the first formation, some old photos and stuff like that. And then it feeds up as you get nearer towards the tunnel, it gets to the more modern day. So you see lots of stuff like that around the place. You think, oh, that'd be absolutely excellent at our place and stuff like that. So being sort of behind the scenes at grounds and stuff like that, you see what's really good, what's really bad. And it'd be nice to, yeah, as Rocket says, it's amazingly exciting for when we get there. The ground could be finished before the season's finished at this stage. But
it's interesting what you're saying, Rocket. I got my wife before the lockdown to drive past Plough Lane, so I just wanted to see what it was like. And do you know what? You're right. Actually, I was really, my wife was looking at me as if I was some sort of fruitcake, because I was getting really emotional about a stand that hadn't been finished yet. But you're right, it does look really big, and it's really weird amongst all the flats. Like, if you think about a lot of grounds, and you're no better than I will, but if you look at a lot of grounds like Shrewsbury and stuff like that, they're built in the middle of nowhere, aren't they? Well, this is going to be one of the one of the rare occasions where a new ground is literally built in a very much a residential area. But yeah, a quick question I've got. How wide is the tunnel? Because obviously Kings Meadow, you literally can touch each other. You couldn't socially distance it at the moment. How big's the tunnel, that sort of side of it? Did you get a chance to see that?
I did, because I remember walking out, but I don't really pay that much attention to the size. I think it's probably bigger. It's probably slightly bigger than Kings Meadow, but I couldn't really tell you, if I'm honest. It's because it's all, especially as it's just the shell, obviously. So I think size-wise will change quite a bit in reality once you're inside something, or once it's been decked out properly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, we're all very much looking forward to it. Obviously, that goes without saying, and hopefully, as we say, we'll be kicking off in League One very, very shortly in Plough Lane. But for today, gents, thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated you coming on. And we hope to see you at any stadium soon.
Yeah.
At some point, yes. But
hopefully.
Yes. But once again, thank you very much. And hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, then, very quickly, what should we do? Let's do some random news stories, because, Stu, you found a story you want to share with us.
Yeah, so I wanted to make sure that it wasn't a football story, because George would do that. So my one was really interesting. It actually comes from Finland, believe it or not. And basically, you know, toilet rolls are in such demand at the moment, you know, like they're gold-plated, it seems that way. Well, a bakery in Finland come up with a novelty idea of keeping his bakery going by actually making cakes that look like toilet roll. So not only now can you wipe your backside with it, you can now chuck it in your gob.
Do they call it Flandrex?
Oh, dear.
See what I did there?
Oh, dear. What I would do, I would put it on Twitter a bit later, the picture. It's brilliant. Don't know how much it cost, but I can't believe toilet roll is literally... the big thing to come out of, I'm not talking, the big thing to come out of this virus is toilet roll. It's like irreplaceable.
Yes, it's really taken off in the last 2 months, hasn't it?
Yes. Before, no one had heard of it.
Yeah. It didn't exist 3 months ago.
But now, no, now I've discovered toilet roll and my life has changed at the age of 26. Right. George, get your football story out of the way.
Okay, so that's my news is that today the IFAB, which is the international body that announces the new laws of the game, they've announced their new laws that will be coming into effect for next season, and that there's major changes to the handball law and goalkeeper and penalty kick laws. So basically they've offered clarification on what is and what isn't a handball, and it seems just as complicated as it was yesterday before they announced it.
Just different.
Just slightly. They've basically clarified what is your arm. And it's taken them about 100 years of evolution to get to this. Basically, it looks like if you're wearing a short sleeve shirt, if it would touch your skin in a short sleeve shirt, it's handball. If it would touch your sleeve, it's not handball. That appears to be broadly what they're trying to go for here.
Just wear long sleeves.
Yeah, the shorter the player, the less chance you've got of being handball.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, well.
It's like every year they want to make new rules. It's the problem UEFA and FIFA. They want to make new rules all the time, don't they? And it just gets confusing.
Yeah.
It does. I was confused with this. Well, today was the news of a man who was caught speeding and he got some huge amount of fine because he was speeding down the motorway from Nottingham to London because he wanted to travel down to London because bread was £1 cheaper, apparently. An absolute numpty of the highest order. Kevin, we have a good news story to finish on.
We do. So our good news story is our friend Matt Harwood, part of the Nine News podcast team, his wife Jess has been ill with, we believe, the coronavirus, but she is getting better. Matt is also unwell himself. He's not quite sure what he's got, but if that's hopefully a good sign that Jess Harwood is recovering, on her way to full recovery. Going to take a while, but she's definitely looking better and feeling better. So we send our best wishes and love to the Harwoods. Basically, that is it, isn't it? That's what better news could you have than one of our friends is feeling better?
Great news.
Absolutely. Do we have time for birthdays, game?
Yeah, why not?
Very quickly, do one each. April the 8th, Kevin, Blade Runner actress Robin Wright.
51.
Nearly. 54.
Oh, okay.
I think she did.
Yeah.
Which was sort of, I thought she was past her best, but never mind.
Oh, mate.
Vivian Westwood, Stu.
40.
40?
I've never seen her.
85, I'm going to guess.
79.
Oh, close.
Only a little out.
I'm not really great with fashion. I don't even know what they look like.
What they look like.
Fashion looks like a thing.
George Patricia Arquette. True Romance. He was in.
50.
Oh, it's close. 52. And then finally, you can all have a guess at mirror reader George Bailey from Harlow, in Essex.
Harrow?
Harlow.
74
from George.
52.
Yeah, it's quite an old name, isn't it? I'm going to go for 80.
Yeah, there's no young people called George.
No one at all. 91. So, Kevin, today in lockdown, you are going to do what?
I'm listening to records I've not heard for a while. So I'm listening to a great album for 2001 by a band called Low Gold, and the album is called Just Backward of Square, which was a cricket reference. That's a cricket position, and that meant their American label didn't ever promote the record because no one knew what it meant. Great album, No Gold, Just Backward of Square. Fantastic record.
Thank you very much, George. Oh, God.
I'm going to recommend that everyone read the IFAB release, which is announcing the new laws of the game for next season. It's a fascinating 16 pages of reading.
My wife has decided that I'm not doing enough work at home, so she wants to paint the walls. So we are looking at paint tonight. So we're watching paint dry.
Nice. It's like listening to this podcast. And I'm going to say, do a jigsaw puzzle. You can do them online. Search for online jigsaw puzzles and you will have endless hours of fun. Stu, we can't do anything else, can we? We're all locked in, so you might as well.
Online jigsaw puzzles?
Yeah, so basically it's like a jigsaw puzzle, but it's just online.
I guess that.
I think you've confused it.
That's confused me. I'll have a look at that. Cool.
Have a look at that. And that is it. And that is it from us. So tomorrow, join us. Why join us tomorrow, George?
Because we will be joined by AFC Wimbledon assistant manager and former head of recruitment, Nick Dawes.
Yes, and we're going to ask about his past life on Shooting Stars. But that is it for today. So once again, huge thank you for Trevor and Ruben for joining us. George, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Kevin, thank you for joining us. Kevin had to disappear, you see. He had to go. We have run really long. Kevin's gone. Stu, thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last. Stay safe, wash your hands. We will speak to you again tomorrow.